Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak. And Tim, today I think we're talking about an important subject because it's both an amazing thing when the results are great, but it's also a really sobering thing when the results are not great. And that's the subject of social and emotional learning.
Yeah. Emotional intelligence in students has become a front and center issue for so many educators in so many states across America and probably in the industrialized world.
Yes.
But you're absolutely right. When it's there, the students are extraordinary. You think, oh my gosh, you're going to lead the world one day and I'll be following.
Yep.
When it's not there, you just wonder, are we going to fill up our prison beds with these kids that may be smart as a whip but have never learned to navigate life?
Yeah. Wow.
So it's a huge, huge issue. I was just up in Illinois, in fact, talking to school principals. And it was an amazing epiphany for me when this subject came up, social and emotional learning, that it was on the radar screen of every one of the people. So they're measuring reading, writing, arithmetic, of course, but they're also realizing school performance has been affected negatively by kids lacking social and emotional stability.
And that's what it feels like people are noticing now is the lack of soft skills is hurting our hard skills.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, when that starts to happen, that's when everybody starts paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's you can even see it just happening around you with the students around you. Like I think about, you know, I was recently with a group of student leaders.
Yeah.
I say student leaders, you know, they've got 4.0s. A lot of them are heading to Ivy League schools. And I'm walking around talking to them before, the presentation starts. And I talked to several of them, but I think specifically of one young man. I had an entire conversation with him, and his eyes did not leave my shoes.
Yeah.
He's just looking down the entire time. And I'm sure everybody listening to this who works with students is nodding their head right now because we've all met those kids.
Yeah.
You know, some are farther along or worse off than others, but we've all met those kids who, man, the intelligence is there, but the social and emotional aspects of what they need are not there. And we know you can be as smart as you want to be, but once you get outside of college, you're going to have a hard time succeeding.
Yeah. So what I've often said is the data, when I look at the data, it seems like students today here in the 21st century, as opposed to the 20th and 19th century American kids, they're cognitively advanced. They are so smart.
Yes.
And they are so savvy to what's going on around them, more than I was at their age. And then biologically advanced. I mean, the kids are going through puberty faster, and they're just great physical specimens oftentimes. You look at Division I athletics, and these are great
athletes.
These
are big kids.
Yes, that's right. However, they're socially, emotionally behind.
Mm.
Certainly, the smartphone is not the sole culprit, but it's not helped us. We're looking down at our shoes, or if there's a phone there, I'm looking at my phone. So I don't mean to oversimplify this, but there's been factors in our culture today, 21st century culture, that have helped us speed ahead, and then some that have caused us to drop behind. And some of these soft skills are what we're missing today in American graduates.
Yeah, and we'll see this everywhere, I think. But, I mean, as you and I were talking, you said that you even saw this in your own kids.
Absolutely,
as they were growing up.
So both of my kids are grown now. Bethany is 30, Jonathan's 26. They're both gainfully employed. Thank you very much.
Yes, yeah.
But during their growing up years, even though we have a very stable home, lots of love, and we ate together, dinner, you know, all the good things that families do, both of my kids have struggled with anxiety and depression.
Mm.
And so we didn't feel like we weren't loving them well or kind to them or leading them. But there were chemical imbalances, but I saw a struggle in my daughter that I had never seen prior to this that was triggered when she was a late teen. And then my son later, same kind of battle, different outcomes, but same kind of battle. And it was clear to me, this was not an academic issue. They're both smart kids.
Yes.
It was a social emotional issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the way it often goes. It feels like it's not the bad kids. Sometimes it's the smart kids. It's the kids who are achieving, the kids who come from great homes, right?
Yeah.
The factors that are causing this seem to be factors that are cultural, right? They're things that are just happening out there in the world.
Yeah. So here's the data. Ever since 2012, so the last several years, anxiety and depression in high school kids has been on the rise. It plateaued for a while, but since 2012, it's skipped forward. Dr. Gene Twenge believes, after looking at the data, that it's social media.
Mm.
Now, again, she wouldn't be saying that's the only thing, but boy, if you track the rise in anxiety and depression,
there's no way not to see a correlation.
Yeah, that's right. There's a correlation. Yeah. In fact, this is interesting. The federal government just released the numbers, and life expectancy in America in the 21st century is dropping.
Wow.
It's dropped 3 times in 3 years. So it was steadily going up. We're living longer, 76, 77, 80, 81, 82, and now it's dropping. Mm-hmm. The reason it's dropping is not because science and technology isn't working. It's because of suicide rates among people that shouldn't
wow.
be concerned. I mean, it's never right. It's always wrong. But young people especially is tragic.
Yeah.
When they're university athletes or high school or middle school kids that just get hopeless because emotionally they're not able to navigate life.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are probably not seeing the connection between this lack of social and emotional skills and anxiety and depression. But if you watch it, you can see the connections very clearly, right?
No doubt.
When I do not have the emotional capacity to handle the situations that I'm in, when I feel all the time socially behind, a lot of times brought on by social media, right?
That's
Everybody
right.
looks like they're having a great life on social media. All of a sudden what that does is start to make me feel like I don't belong,
I'm
not worthy, I'm
a
loser, all those kinds of things.
No doubt about it. So here's the most scary number of all. Over the last decade, suicides among these students has jumped 84%. So kind of weird. Yeah, it's kind of up and down. I mean, there's always some tragic cases in every generation, but we're seeing it skyrocket now. And I'm thinking we in the world of education and parents, for that matter, have got to address this issue head on. If that was happening for any other cause, we'd be immediately paying attention.
Exactly,
to it.
Yeah.
But I think somehow we just go, I don't know why they're so sad. I don't know why they're not engaging.
Yeah.
And I think it's social-emotional learning that will be part of the key to make this thing work again.
Well, I want to talk about what social-emotional learning is, because I think it's key to say social-emotional learning can help avoid some of these really negative things, you know, depression, anxiety, and even suicide. I think building your social and emotional capacities is going to help you deal with that.
Right.
But what social scientists are also finding is that if you build those same tools, the same things that are going to help you avoid the bad stuff are actually going to help you succeed in getting the great stuff, right?
That's right.
It's the kids who have strong social and emotional capacity that are able to handle the big job and the stress of the big job, achieve great things, maybe run for office and do all these amazing things that we all want our kids to aspire to. The kids who have developed these muscles are the ones that can handle those situations. And I know there's some people that have even found that that social and emotional learning is a higher predictor of life success than even IQ is.
Yeah.
And it's all because of this.
Yeah. The way I've said it is EQ is a greater predictor of success in life than IQ.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're seeing a student struggle in this area, but you're not quite sure how to peg it, not how to identify it, some common symptoms would be social withdrawal from friends or family in the classroom, or the opposite. They're crying for attention by bouncing off the walls and doing all kinds of things. They would say bad attention is better than no attention.
Yeah.
Napping or sleeping far more than normal. That can be at home or in class. We know students that take a little cat nap there.
Disappear and go for a nap.
That's right, yeah. Feeling overwhelmed by normal expectations.
Yeah.
Where you realize these are normal stresses in life. We all have them, but for some reason it's hard to navigate for them. Neglecting to shower or even take care of personal hygiene. That can be a signal something's not right socially or emotionally.
Yeah.
And then lastly, of course, self-harm, including cutting or mutilating with sharp edges.
Yeah.
These are scary, but these are signals of we have got to do something besides reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Yes, we got to step in with something else. So let's talk about what social emotional learning is.
All right.
And then maybe we can get into a few of the, you know, when it's got packaged by several institutions who said this is what social emotional learning is, they kind of outlined a few of the characteristics of
it. So I'll jump in, but Andrew, you are studying this as well, so let's volley on this one.
Okay.
First of all, I would not say that social and emotional learning is a magic wand. It's the only reason anxiety and depression exist among students.
Yeah, certainly not.
Some need medication. There's just all kinds of different reasons. However, for the average student, and there's a lot of them, the ordinary, everyday student, practicing social emotional learning in a class, teaching social skills and emotional skills, generally just completely positively affects school performance.
Yes.
All kinds of things we're measuring in education happen better when there's SEL, social-emotional learning.
Mm.
So it's the learning of these four big quadrants, which I'll mention very briefly. Self-awareness, okay. Self-management.
Yes.
Social awareness and relationship management.
Yes.
So those four big areas. Now, as we've created content for this, knowing that schools are needing it, we have all kinds of things underneath those four big areas. But those are the big areas that generally are the ones that describe emotional intelligence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like you were saying, there's so many things that are underneath of those things. And we're going to get into those in just a little bit. But what the key idea here is, what we're trying to get to, is helping students deal with the aspects of life, the social emotional aspects of life that maybe, if you go back 20 years or 30 years, you might say were developed a little more naturally. And today they're missing out on opportunities to develop those skills. So even when we talk about some of the things that are underneath of self-awareness and you know, relationship skills and some of those things, you're going to say, why do we need to teach kids about that? Nobody taught me about that. You have to remember that the opportunities to learn that are sort of naturally being taken away from kids. They're spending more time on a screen than face to face. And what it's doing is we're realizing we're missing out on some key ideas here.
Yeah.
Some key ideas.
Do you mind if I volley back on
Please.
That? This is unplanned, but we'll add this at no extra charge.
No extra charge.
I think you're absolutely right. Back in the 60s and 70s, I was a little kid in the 60s and 70s, believe it or not. I distinctly remember learning emotional intelligence, now that I look back, with dinner conversations every night. And I would say most families listening would say, yeah, that's probably not happening as much as it used to. We got soccer practice and violin lessons and karate and everything else going on. But, you know, those conversations help. Number two, I was working a job as a young teen, 12 years old, throwing newspapers on driveways and then working at a fast food restaurant. Some kids obviously still do that. But if you look at the average teenager in America, we're not working in high school. We're doing all kinds of sports and plays and everything else, which you can learn SEL there, but those are facsimiles of the real world. I learned emotional intelligence on a job.
Yes.
With a boss I had to please.
Yes.
And was it fun? Not really, but I had to learn it. And so, again, many of the elements that organically taught us are no longer in place organically.
You sort of navigated the complexity of social relationships and managing your own emotions, like I'm tired, I want to get out of bed, but I got to do it anyways. Yeah. You started thinking about that as a 16-year-old, right?
Yeah.
When a kid is sort of tossed out into the world,
that's right,
hasn't had those opportunities to develop it, that's where they get into trouble.
It shows up, yeah.
And this is a challenge because a lot of people are thinking, I signed up to teach math, and you want me to talk about social skills?
Yeah,
But we just have to realize this is part of education, leadership in the 21st century with these kids.
And I would add one more time, your math scores go up if you do this.
Absolutely.
So whether it's advisement period or wherever you
squeeze it in. It's not a lost cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. So let's talk about some of the things that sort of fit under those really key categories that you mentioned.
Okay. So just a handful of them would be, one, and I think this has got to be the first one, an accurate self-perception. Mm. It's helping students, and for that matter, staff and faculty, really become self-aware and perceive themselves accurately. One of the things we hear from educators quite often is, that student has no idea how he's coming across right now. You know, he thinks everything's fine and it isn't fine. So an accurate self-perception is really, really key. Another one is self-confidence, which I think is an attribute that falls somewhere between overconfident and underconfident.
Yes.
But I know what my gifts and strengths are, and I'm accurately confident in who I am.
Love that.
Which allows me to take a test and feel confident I can do well. Another one, huge today, impulse control.
Yeah.
So when I look at the numbers, impulsivity has jumped up, and I can only imagine it's because of the Google reflex we have, the impulse to tweet back at someone who just said something nasty on social media.
Yep.
So impulse control, I bet every teacher listening would say, I wish I had more of that in my classroom. Problem solving. This is actually part of the emotional intelligence equation, that I can look at something and I'm not so flooded that I can't look at that and say, I know a good way to solve that problem.
Yeah.
Let me do one more, then I want you to volley back some of that you've been studying. Analyzing situations. So essentially, at least a part of critical thinking is a piece of this puzzle, that I'm able to analyze all the dimensions of a situation, can see what wouldn't work, but maybe three ideas that would work.
Mm.
So that one goes hand in hand with problem solving. But we need to teach our kids to analyze themselves and situations
That's great.
They find themselves in.
Yeah, just a couple more, because if you look at, so CASEL's kind of like the leader on this, CASEL. They're an institution that's identified the 30, I think they have 31 sub-competencies that are under those core competencies. So a couple more they identified, self-efficacy, which I have been studying and learning a lot about, because realizing that's one of the sub-competencies that sort of has come up to the top of the list, which is confidence built around my own purpose, my own direction. I know who I am. I know where I'm going. I know what kind of person I want to be. Obviously, you can imagine a kid who has that as a seventh grader or even a 12th grader is going to be far above most of their peers. Another great one is empathy, right? We hear that all the time, but actually giving kids a handle on how do I practice it? Why is it important? What are some, you know, some simple things that I can do every day to build my empathy? That's a great one.
Andrew, I believe part of the reason we need to teach this, perhaps more today, and the reason bullying has gone up is because we haven't dealt with this issue.
Totally.
I will bully only when I have absolutely no compassion for that kid that's getting bullied. This is for my entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
And again, maybe I'm saying the obvious, but we've got to, we can't leave this to the margins. This has got to be core.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And that's why we're big components of, if you're going to learn these things, you need to learn them in a social context.
Yes, right? That's right. Yeah.
Because, I mean, part of the reason that we're having to deal with this in the first place is that there aren't enough social contexts where they're building these muscles.
Right.
We need to talk about them in that social context.
Yep.
Just a couple more. Stress management is on there, which I think is great. Yeah. When you are overwhelmed, which is inevitable, by the way, especially in our 21st century world, how do you handle that? Self-discipline, another great one.
Huge.
Personal practices that are going to build myself, help me achieve my goals. And then the last one I'll mention is relationship building.
Yeah.
How do you build a great relationship with somebody? What are the requirements in a, you know, a great friendship or a connection with a boss? Or, you know, you talked about learning the intricacies of those relationships when you were young. These kids need to help getting navigating those issues.
And stop ghosting each other.
That's right. Don't ghost.
That's right.
Don't fub each other,
that's right.
You know.
Exactly.
All those kinds of things.
No.
So
these are so crucial. Andrew, again, when I always try to look at something in historical context. So 100, 150 years ago, kids were in one-room schoolhouses, at least 150 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think you just naturally learned social-emotional skills because a 12-year-old was helping a 7-year-old with his spelling.
Exactly.
And all ages were mixing it up together.
Exactly.
And so it wasn't just I'm in a silo of 7th graders or 12th graders.
Yeah.
I'm with each other and I'm having to learn.
Yeah. And you'd have to look at today's education system and say, we're far beyond that in so many ways. We're developing kids. They're smarter. They're learning quicker. They're learning faster. They're learning more. But we have to acknowledge where we've gone wrong, where we've misstepped as we've made our education system better. Yeah. And that's really what this is about.
Well, a number of teachers have affirmed to me when the subject has come up on site when I'm with them, we started measuring an incomplete list of items.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we measure academics. Oh my goodness, do we? SAT, ACT, GPA. But that became the sole report card.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both know great people graduating from our schools is what we need. And that's more than just GPA. Nothing more common than a really smart 4.0 that is so falling so short of their potential because of emotional intelligence
issues. Or the opposite is true. Yeah. Really amazing people who do really amazing things. Their GPA was not that great. Their
ACT
score was not that great.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not a correlation to success in life. And so that's why we need to think about this stuff.
Absolutely.
But you told me, we were talking before, and you told me this really amazing story that I'd love for us to kind of close on. And what does it look like when we do this, when we give this gift of social and emotional learning to the kids that we're leading?
So this is a true story but that took place decades ago. But Andrew, it just came to me as we were talking about this subject earlier. Miss Thompson, a single woman, took her first year job as an elementary school teacher. She taught third grade. And like many educators, she was excited at the beginning and, boy, I got some good ideas.
Yeah.
I'm going to change the world.
All the energy.
That's right. Exactly. All the energy of someone in their 20s. But in her early years teaching third grade, there was a boy named Teddy that was in her class that just was needy. He just was emotionally needy. She couldn't quite figure out why he was screaming for attention all the time, but he would do all kinds of negative things to get some attention.
Yeah.
In fact, in Teddy's mind, bad attention was better than no attention.
Yeah.
So he was causing trouble, blurting out things in the middle of class, distracting all the classmates. And Miss Thompson, even though she's young and vigorous, was getting fed up with Teddy's behavior. So she's really looking forward to holiday break in December before she can just rest and relax and get a break from Teddy.
Yeah.
So they decide they're going to have a Christmas party before Christmas break. And some of the kids brought in a Christmas gift to Miss Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And Teddy was one of them. She was a little surprised because he was pretty much self-centered and chaotic and a little rebel, to be honest with you. But he brought in a crudely wrapped, in newspaper, mind you, a couple of gifts. And so she noticed as they gathered around her desk, she started opening the gifts. They were all, the kids were laughing at Teddy's wrapping because it was clearly not as good as the others. So she quickly knew I better fend this off or Teddy's going to start a fight with these kids that are making fun of his package.
Yeah.
So she said, oh, look. Teddy gave me, this is really cool. She unwrapped the newspaper to find in one of them a half used up bottle of perfume.
Oh, wow.
So she realized this is not brand new from Macy's.
Yeah.
And so she didn't know what to think, but she thought, well, I better make sure that I'm positive about this. So I sprayed a little bit on my neck, and she, I love this Teddy. Oh, thank you. She opened up the second package. There's a set of pearls.
Oh, wow.
But half of them are gone.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
So there's a lot of string with the pearls. So she realized, again, this is not a new set of pearls, but she puts them on quickly to make sure everybody realizes this is a great thing.
Yeah.
Well, she says goodbye. The bell rings. She wipes her brow and says, thank God it's Christmas. But Teddy lingered behind. And she wondered because he was quiet for the first time in his life. And he finally said to her, Miss Thompson, I'm really glad you like the presents. She said, well, I do, Teddy. She said, you smell just like my mom used to smell. And suddenly she realized, oh, my gosh. And then he said, you look just like my mom used to look. And so she bid him farewell, and he went off. And she quickly went to the principal's office to check the records. And sure enough, she found what she had feared. Teddy's mom had passed away the year before. And now he was growing up with a busy dad and siblings, and he was not being led well in his home just because of a busy dad. It wasn't a bad dad. He was just busy. And so his needs had crept to the surface. But she suddenly realized, I've got to do more with Teddy than just academics.
Yeah.
So hope I can make it through this story. So she comes back in January after the break, and she's ready to go. And she teaches the class as well as she's ever done, but she gives special attention to this kid who has great social and emotional needs.
Mm.
She asks him to erase the chalkboard when it needs to be erased, and she puts him in charge of some things and affirms him and builds these skills in him, and she notices a change over the spring semester. He's just getting better. He's cooperative. In fact, he's with it. In fact, some days he's leading the class, and she's going, what has happened?
Yeah.
Well, she knew exactly what happened. I got past just academics, and I did life. In the final week of the semester, school's almost over, and she's no longer going to see Teddy anymore. There's still part of her that's thinking, thank God it's over, but Teddy lingers behind the last week of class, and he says, Miss Thompson, thank you. He was at least aware enough by this point to know she had done something extra for him.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't think I could have made it without you.
Mm.
When he walked out, she said, well, let's stay in touch. And she thought, well, we probably won't, but you know, that's what you're supposed to say. But she thought, I've learned a lesson. I need to make sure and stay on this very issue of social and emotional learning.
Especially for those kids who need it.
Especially for these kind of kids. Well, she actually did hear from Teddy. Every now and then he'd slip in as a fourth grader and a fifth grader and a sixth grader and just say hi. But years later, when he graduated from high school, he wrote her a note and said, Dear Miss Thompson, it's Teddy. Remember me? I was with you years ago in third grade. Just graduated high school. Bet you thought I could never do that.
Wow.
I also bet you didn't know that I couldn't have done it without you. Love, Teddy. Well, she kept the letter. She got a little teary and kept the letter and thought, this is a reminder. 4 years later, Dear Miss Thompson, it's Teddy. Remember me? I just graduated from college, second in my class.
Wow.
Bet you thought I could never do that. Years later, Dear Ms. Thompson, it's Teddy. Theodore Stollard, MD. He had just graduated from med school, first in his class.
Wow.
So I just want to point out real quick before I finish the story, his academics went up because everything else went
up. There's a connection there.
Yeah, yeah. But what he said at the end of this letter was, Ms. Thompson, I'm getting married this summer. And I just wonder if you'd sit where my mom would have sat. She, of course, considered that a privilege. But the reason I think it's important to tell this story, it's just a reminder. Some have heard this story before, but to me, Miss Thompson, and by the way, it was still Miss Thompson. She's still a single lady decades later. But she knew my contribution wasn't just great. I'm so glad he did well at math. It was he did well in life.
Mm.
And that's what SEL does.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm just saying to listeners, we've got to clue in. It's only going to get worse if we don't address this issue. And I think we can get better if we do.
Talking about it is belief. And that's what I love about that story.
That's right.
Talking about it is believing that the kids who are lacking in these skills have the ability to achieve everything that they want to
achieve.
That's
right. Absolutely.
Teddy is not limited. Teddy's not limited. What he could achieve is obviously really, really high if we can help him build some of the things that he's missing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Teddies that are sitting in our classrooms.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So obviously, we believe this is really important. Yeah. We hope you believe that too. But we believe it's so important that I spent the better part of last year helping to make sure that we had all the research that we needed to roll out this new Habitudes course. And we call it Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning.
Yeah.
Because we believe, obviously, we believe in the power of Habitudes, the power in teaching with an image. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to leverage the power of teaching with an image to address these issues.
Yeah.
So for every one of these sub-competencies under the core competencies, we have a habitude that aligns.
Yeah.
And we want to help you utilize an image to have a conversation to build these social and emotional learning skills.
Andrew, we've said for years, pictures are worth 1,000 words. You engage them in social-emotional learning as soon as you put this picture up and begin to talk about it. So
absolutely.
We do believe it's a different way to teach social-emotional learning, and it's a way that's getting through, and many schools have already adopted it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we would love for you to check that out. You can find all about Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning on our website, growingleaders.com. You can sign on and use it through Habitudes Online, which is a really cool digital tool. Tim, thanks so much for leading this conversation, for telling that story, for helping to inspire us to take time to build social and emotional learning skills with students. This is so important,
important.
Well, thank you guys for listening today. Please, please, please follow us on social media. You can find us at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore on Twitter and Facebook. You can find us on Instagram, all those kinds of places. Rate our podcast, if you will, on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, because that really helps get the word out about this.
Yeah.
And then as always, if you've got ideas for things you want us to talk about, people you want us to interview, send us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love hearing from you and getting those. Thanks so much for joining us for this conversation. We'll see you next time.